Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Four men in a rock and roll band, fly at night in the morning we land, fly at night till we're satisfied, see the morning from the other side.
All right, welcome back to it. It's In the Box. We're live on location at the Marshes Golf Club today. It is the Ottawa Senators Alumni Golf Tournament, and as you can imagine, all kinds of Senators alumni, just NHL alumni in general. Larry Robinson's here. We already had Jason York, my old colleague, joined us right off the top of the show, and we'll continue to filter in various guests in person as they roll through in front of our clubhouse position. But for now, let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. And for the first time since the pandemic hit, we got the UFC back in Canada. It's UFC 289 Vancouver. And you know we're speaking to Aaron Bronstetter, TSN's UFC reporter. He is on site in Vancouver to help us out with this. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. My first question to you is, should I be taking offense that you played me in with an old man as the song? I mean, listen, I've got some gray hairs, but I feel like maybe something more upbeat, a song about how young I am might have been a little bit more appropriate.
Well, you got to take that up with Graham Creech. He's in charge of the tunes, okay? I'll step away from that because, well,
Wanted a band from Vancouver, that's all.
All right. Well, scene setter for us here, Aaron. Let's start with Amanda Nunes, just one fight removed from the upset that she suffered. What do you make of, not the comeback of sorts here, but, where she's at in her career right now and how big this is this weekend?
Yeah, this is a pivotal fight for her in terms of her overall resume. I think that if she wins this fight, I just don't see a whole lot out there for her at 135 pounds or really 145 pounds either that are going to be able to hang with her. I think Aldana is the best of what they have right now that they can put in front of her. The fight was supposed to be Juliana Pena, who defeated her, but in their rematch, it was so lopsided in favor of Nunes. I think they had a 50-43 scorecard, which you don't see that very often. It was just one-way traffic. So this is, the fight to make for her. I think that if she does win, I'm not really sure where she goes from here, because I just don't know if we're going to be able to find anybody who's going to be able to challenge her.
And just overall, with the return to Canada, how has it been embraced locally?
Yeah, I was at the media conference yesterday, and I asked one of the UFC staff if this was a good crowd or a small crowd, because obviously you're not going to fill up an arena for a press conference. And he said it was larger than usual. So I think that it's being well received here. I've run into a lot of people that have been asking me questions about it wherever I've been going. So it seems like everybody's very excited about it in the city.
Aaron Bronstetter is joining us here from Vancouver, the site of UFC 289. So, talking about Nunes, what else do you like about this particular card?
Well, the co-main event is a phenomenal fight, and it seems to be generating a ton of interest. The former lightweight champion, Charles Oliveira, who just lost his title in his last fight, taking on Benil Dariush. And he said if Dariush wins, he's got to be next in line for a title shot. High stakes, two really exciting fighters. Both are finishers. Both are incredible grapplers and really solid strikers as well. And I think that's a really fun fight. I think the other thing really to watch here is the Canadian. We haven't had a Canadian star breakthrough really since GSP. You can put Rory McDonald in that conversation, but if you look at who we have right now, we don't have a single ranked Canadian. And I think, it's going to be really important to see which Canadians rise to the occasion fighting here back in Canada for the first time in nearly 4 years. I think that a lot of them are coming into this with a great sense of pride in representing their country. But, that only takes you so far. It's a game of matchups and skill. So I'm really eager to see which Canadians leave with a W on Saturday so we can kind of hang our hat on for the future.
I'll ask you about the Canadians in a moment. But for Oliveira, just the impressive run that he went on, just tearing through not only the win streak, but the caliber of opponent that he faced and won. And each fight was super exciting, where he appeared to be on the wrong side of it before pulling out victory. He just went on an absolute tear. Are you surprised maybe? Or maybe just off your thoughts on not having an immediate rematch?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. But it was another situation where you had two things that were playing against him, I guess, which was that he lost pretty handily to Islam Makhachev, and they really wanted to make that fight between Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski, number one versus number two, pound for pound. And it just seemed like everything was aligning to that. Now, why he didn't get, you know, the next title shot, I don't really know. It could have to do with two factors with Islam Makhachev. One is that he doesn't train during Ramadan, or at least not that hard during Ramadan. Doesn't like to compete during Ramadan. And the UFC holds an annual card now in Abu Dhabi in October, where typically they like to have headliners that kind of represent that region. I know Islam isn't from Abu Dhabi or anything like that, but the Muslim fighters tend to draw a bigger crowd and more fans in Abu Dhabi and have the crowd behind them. So I think they basically earmarked him for the October card. Now, it'll be a bit of a quick turnaround for the winner of this fight, given that it's June. But I think that whoever wins this fight likely gets the next shot, although we also do have that next pay-per-view in Utah. End of July pay-per-view in Utah, headlined by Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier. So there's still some pieces of the puzzle that need to be sorted out.
Looking at the Canadians, got to start with Gatineau's Marc-Andre Barriot, who's coming off TKO in his last fight. Just thoughts on where his game is at. He did compete here in Ottawa, homecoming, which I think that was the first time you, Steve Bunda and I met you, but seeing Barriot fight then to now where he's at now, how would you assess where he is as a fighter?
Well, he made a very smart move in his career. He moved over to Team Kilcliff in South Florida and basically has been living out of a motorhome, and which he has, you know, since actually driven back to Gatineau to spend some time with his family prior to this fight. And he drove to Gatineau, flew out here, and then after this fight, he's going to spend some time at home. And he's very excited about that. But he and his fiance are living out there in South Florida, and it just has changed his life. It's changed the trajectory of his career. I think that he now has a lot more skill, more refined skills. And you see, he is still working with old coaches as well. So he's just learning from all kinds of other athletes. Not to mention that the athletes in his weight class in particular are really, really strong at that particular gym. You got a lot of big names there. So I think that he's getting a lot of really valuable reps every day in the gym.
If there are any kind of more casual fans listening in, what can you share about the rest of the Canadians on the card in terms of expectations? And just to build off that point that you had with Steve a couple moments ago about a Canadian taking that next step.
Well, I've got to say that Mike Malott has really risen to the occasion this week. If you watched the press conference yesterday, he was basically the star of the press conference. He's fired up. He's got a ton of charisma. All of his wins come in the first round, and he's got 9 wins. If he can continue on that kind of a trend where he's getting first-round finishes, he's being, a little bit, charismatic, he's a good-looking kid in his prime right now, 31 years old, I think that he has a really bright future in terms of representing Canada in the future.
Aaron Bronstetter is our guest, TSN MMA reporter, live from 289 in Vancouver. Just a couple more for you, Aaron. I know it's a busy day for you. But just overall, what are your thoughts on the strength of this card for a pay-per-view? And not only that it's a pay-per-view, but it's the return to Canada.
Yeah, I think that it's important. It's important to this market to have the UFC back here. And if I were to guess, I think they'll probably end up coming back again before the end of the year. It's an important market. And I think that whenever they come and visit, it reminds them of how strong of a market this is. And, I was seeing the look on Dana White's face yesterday when the fans were there and they were cheering. I think that it was really a really cool thing to have the UFC back. And it kind of, I think, brought back memories of what this market was like for the UFC.
And last one, wouldn't be an MMA interview without an update on Conor McGregor. I guess thoughts on The Ultimate Fighter, the start to that, and where and when this fight eventually takes place in terms of weight, and if you do see it happening, just overall thoughts on the McGregor news.
Yeah, right now it seems like it's anyone's guess because McGregor still hasn't reenlisted in the anti-doping testing program that the UFC has, and once you do that, it's about a 6-month wait before you can compete again. So I think that we're waiting to see when that is. I expect it to be in the coming days, and that we see him compete at the end of the year. That's the final card of the year, which is, I believe, like a week before Christmas in Las Vegas. That would be my best guess. And I would also think that it's at 170 pounds.
All right, we'll leave it there with Aaron Bronstetter. As Creature said, busy. Great to have the UFC back north of the border in Vancouver, and it all gets underway this weekend as back in Canada, UFC 289. Always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Hey, thank you for having me at Creature. Next time, really work on that song selection. I have to believe in you. I think you can do a better job.
All right.
If you're going to continue to throw him under the bus, you are welcome anytime. Thank you, Aaron. Joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. And apologies, I was a little distracted back here at the golf course. Somebody came by that might be a regular on our pregame shows and wanted to brag that his group is 3-under through the first 5 holes. Apparently, he is shooter on the golf course as well. So he just wanted to pass that on to you, Graham, okay, as well. So Brad Shooter Smith is off to a great start. I guess that's our report. We have to only update his scores as long as he continues to play that well. Okay. We are live on location at the Marshes for the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament. And still to come on the phone, though, we're going to have AJ join us, talk some CFL, some Red Blacks coming up at around noon. Gord Wilson's coming up at around 1 o'clock. Let's take a break, and we'll start to filter in some more in-person guests for you here as well as the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament to benefit First Assist. And Soldier On continues from the Marshes and on TSN 1200.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Pump up the jam, pump it up while your feet are stumping. And the jam is pumping, look ahead, the crowd is jumping. Pump it up a little more, get the party going on the dance floor. See, cause that's
all right, welcome back to it. Live at the Marshes, Sens Alumni Golf Tournament. On location with you till 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll continue to filter in some guests as they stroll by. And there'll be a lot coming. You know why? The feed bag's out, you know. Lunch is almost ready. Oh, it's funny how that works. Food comes out, people just arrive. So there'll be a lot of people coming by in the very near future.
You get AJ, your bag yet?
I have not. I got to wait in line. Okay, all right. If there's any left over, maybe I'll just grab something that falls on the ground, you know, 2-second rule.
You're getting a meal.
We'll see. AJ would if he was here for sure. He'd get two maybe. And he's going to join us on the phone coming up at noon. And we're going to talk more about the CFL season underway. And, of course, I know AJ's jacked about it. Jeff Avery's on the station already this morning. It's game one in Montreal. Alouettes and the Red Blacks tomorrow night. They'll have the call at 7. Lee and Duke will have the pregame at 5:30 tomorrow. CFL season began last night, and there's a little Friday night football tonight, so we'll get to that at noon. Gord Wilson's going to stop by at 1. Thank you to Aaron Bronstetter from TSN. He's in Vancouver for the UFC this weekend, but as that was happening, I see all your texts pouring in. Bruce Garriock from Post Media reporting that Steve Apostolopoulos is out. He has grown frustrated with the process. So Steve Apostolopoulos, who it's believed has had the highest bid, according to Bruce Garriock as well, of north of $1 billion U.S., has grown so frustrated with the process, as we're coming up on 4 weeks this Monday since the binding bids were submitted, and there was only 4 coming in. Now we officially only have 3 parties involved in the process, Michael Landlauer, the Kimmel brothers, and, of course, the Nico Sparks group as well, officially still in. But according to Post Media and Bruce Garriock, Steve Apostolopoulos is out. But Bruce reports that there's still a chance that they still could try to draw him back in, they being GSP handling the sale and the estate, the Senators themselves. So we'll see. So many twists and turns. Like I said, throughout this whole process, I've heard so many times, I've heard that every group that's been involved has been out at some point. Credible people telling me this. Okay. And then credible people also saying, nope, they're in. So because there's no rules to this process, right? You had to have your bids in by May 15th. After that, there's no rules. You can add investors. You can drop investors. You can change your bid. You could team up. You could say you're out. So presumably Apostolopoulos could be talked into getting back in at this point. So here we are. But that is the very, very latest on it. So it is interesting, though, that, of course, the Kimmel brothers and Ann Lauer are still officially in. And listen, it's so tough. I think it's never been fair to say, oh, this is the favorite, right? Because, like, what does that mean? You every bid's a bit different, how much debt's involved, how much experience, and that's where I'm going to come with the Kimmels and Ann Lauer as well as involved. But when you talk about those two bids, Graham, with the Kimmel brothers and Ann Lauer, and currently Ann Lauer, he is a current governor in the league. He is a minority owner of the Montreal Canadiens. He is a known entity to Gary Bettman, the board, and the NHL at large. The Kimmels also as well, because they were former minority owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins before the Fenway Sports Group bought the Pens year and a half ago, whenever that was, officially. So, you know this. It's like anything else, right? If you are inviting people into your club, and that's what still has to happen at the end of this process, whichever group is selected to buy the team, you still got to get 2/3 vote at the league level. It stands to reason, if you've got some parties involved here that you already know intimately because they're already in the league or have been in the league, it's notable that Ann Lauer and the Kimmels are, of course, still officially in. But the news breaking in the last 20 minutes or so from Bruce Garriott of Post Media, Steve Apostolopoulos apparently is out, and he's just frustrated with how this has been dragging out. So there you go, creature. I don't know what else to say. It's exhausting, isn't it? What can you add?
Yeah, not a lot from what you just added. The two out of the three bids that remain are or have been in the club before, and obviously that's important to the NHL in terms of knowing what to expect from the groups and trusting them and making sure that that they're confident that in the legitimate bids. And it's frustrating for everyone at this point. I wonder if we start hearing about others trickling out and if that signals that we're nearing finding out who's going to be owning this team. But I think so many people are just sick and tired of waiting here, and they just want the news, especially, like, you think about the fans. Like, they're pumped up for the offseason. The draft is quickly approaching where, oh, what's been in the news lately? Well, the Senators are talking to teams about trading Alex DeBrincat, and they're possibly interested in bringing in a goaltender. A lot of these deals get handled leading up to and at the draft. So a lot of people just want to know who's owning this team, preparing to head into the most crucial offseason maybe in franchise history here. So it's just frustrating. People are done with it.
All right. So that's it. That's all we can offer at this stage. But apparently we are down to officially three, and we'll see where this goes next, because we're coming up on that 4-week mark, coming up on Monday, since the final bids. Well, you can't even say it that way, right? That was a final opportunity to get into the end game process, I guess is the way you can phrase it, right? And there was only four bids at that point, but the latest, apparently Steve Apostolopoulos, who was believed to have the highest bid so far throughout this process, is out, and we'll see where that takes us next. Any thoughts on that? And I know that you do have thoughts. You've already started texting on this to
1200. Especially one person. There's one texter that's probably sent in like 30 texts on it.
Oh, man.
People are fired up, I tell you.
Oh, man. Serious question, guys. Do the Melnick sisters want to sell, or is this just a fact-finding mission for the NHL? Dino. No, this is, you know, they're selling the team. This is happening. Now, they want to keep a small piece, though. And you got to remember this. Anna and Olivia Melnick are separate from the three-member board that runs the estate, right? Those are two separate entities and with two different ideologies as well. That is not absolutely one and the same. And we touched on this in the show yesterday. If you're wondering maybe what part of the holdup is, I would not be surprised that is part of the holdup. Maybe a bit of a disagreement on the same side of the fence. Not as much as, hey, how much can you get your price up to the groups that you actually want to sell the team to? Like, and listen, we throughout this process since May 15th, how many times with various groups have we heard adding new investors, right? And I know that the Nico Sparks group, they added some investors, and they added some names like Donovan Bailey, what was brought forth, the Dragons as well, and some
Matt
other.
Matt Spezza.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that group took some criticism for that, you know, from just basically fans and observers, like, what's going on here? Other groups have added investors as well. You know, the Kimmels since then have added investors. It's been speculated, I know that in Bruce's piece that he just put out here, that Ann Lauer is debating it. Well, I could tell you, people I talked to, Ann Lauer has added, okay, to up his bid at some point. So that everybody is looking at that really wants this team, and the parties still in it do, to get it. They're looking at all options, and adding investors is not an unusual thing at this stage of the process. It drags it out. We wish it would be done, but we're not. But the interesting part is, you can say you're out, but do you think that, like, how much of that could be, I'm walking away, right? It's like you're buying something. You're buying a car, Graham, right? And you're sticking to your price. And you're just not getting it. It's like you walk up and you leave. You get your car and you drive home, right? And you see if they call. and that's all part of the negotiation. Is that maybe what Apostolopoulos is doing by saying he's out right now? Because in the report from Bruce Garriock and Post Media, says that there's a chance that he could be lured back in. So who knows? Could be just a negotiating ploy at this stage as well. Because, as I said earlier, like, we saw this comment early in the process. And it's so true. What are the rules? There are none. there are really no rules. The only rules that were put in place, you had to have those bids in by May 15th. Everything else, you know, all they're trying to do is drive the price as much as they possibly can. So we'll see where we go from here. Caleb wants me to read all 30 texts.
A lot of them are very similar.
Oh, man. Sorry. Because I was so focused on a few other things here, I haven't been able to sift. Oh, no, not him. Not that guy. All right, come here.
Oh, no.
No, come on. Let's... I thought I made it clear. Okay, put it on. Let's get you on here. All right, let's get this over with. I want to rip the Band-Aid off as quickly as I can. All right, now how many people have you slashed? Do you do that on
the
golf course?
I've been doing
well?
A lot of slashing on the course here.
Yeah.
You know,
Laurie Boschman's our guest, original captain with the Ottawa Senators.
But I have to say, we're minus six after six holes.
Oh.
All right, so
okay.
You know,
well, that's good to hear, because shooter Brad Smith rolled through. We didn't bring him on, but he just wanted to let me know we're 3 under through five, and he was very proud of that. And
okay.
So you're beating that.
Okay, Lloydy, that's not true. We're not that.
Oh, you're lying already. Oh, okay.
All right, maybe we're even par after
maybe
six.
You're even par?
Okay.
Okay, all right. Well, how is your golf game? Do you play much?
Well, you know what? I don't, Lloydy. Last time I was playing golf was last summer, and I'm not much of a golfer. I think I mentioned to you guys before, I like more hunting and fishing. That's what I like to do.
So like the gun range going off in the background?
Oh, exactly. Like I'm kind of jealous of those guys, okay? I can hear them. So if we had a hole here where we could have some clay pigeons or something like that, I'd probably do pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, talk about the event here. It's nice to be, you know, a lot of stuff throughout the pandemic. We were able to do stuff like this.
Right.
And so many charities suffered from that. And Soldier On and First Assist, and that's John Chabot.
Exactly.
First Assist is going to benefit from today. You've been, you know, we have a lot of fun with you, but you're instrumental with the alumni. You've done so much work over the years. What's it mean to have this event and, you know, raising money and, you know, just getting together with a lot of your old buddies?
Well, you know, it's both of those things, right? It's it's we're glad that this is the second year after the pandemic that we're able to host this. We've had a full house. We've got 36 foursomes. We've got 37 alumni that are out here. And, I mean, that's fantastic as far as the turnout goes. And it's always nice for us guys to connect, to see each other, to find out how everyone's doing and those kinds of things. And, you know, throughout the wintertime and stuff, we did some fundraisers out in Smiths Falls and in Ottawa for, you know, Cindy Hooper and the Ottawa Hospital. And it's always wonderful for us to be a part of the community, to do stuff and to raise some funds for worthwhile causes, individuals, those kinds of things. And, of course, you mentioned John Chabot, First Assist. John is a member of our alumni. He's, you know, from Kittigan Zibi, Algonquin. You know, Indian. And so John is just a terrific guy, does great stuff up north all across Canada and the territories. And I've been up there sometimes helping him out with the hockey program because that's, you know, what I know best. And so John does some great things. And again, the Soldier On program, the Ottawa Senators and the Senators alumni, we're just so thrilled to be able to, you know, pass along some funds to our fallen, you know, not fallen soldiers, but injured soldiers. Both physically and mentally.
Exactly, in many ways, right?
Yes,
it's not
exactly.
Just a physical injury, you return.
Exactly. So we do, you know, we host a thing at the Canadian Tire Centre along with the Senators every year. The Soldier On group brings their individuals, and then we host a hockey game up in our alumni suite. So those kinds of things are very rewarding because you hear from the individuals how helpful it is. And so this is why we're doing these kinds of things. And, of course, it just goes without saying that it's nice to get together. It's nice to golf. It's nice to, you know, go play hockey, to do the things we really like to do. But it's nice to get back in the community, right, Lloydie?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, like I said, like it's not just the Sens alumni, but unfortunately, everybody, we had to take a step back from the pandemic.
Yeah.
Last year, it was good to get it going, but I don't know. It feels like we're back up to full speed now, right?
Yeah, it really does. And the fact that I think there's so much excitement in our community because there's going to be new owners, of course. There's lots of talk about it. Nobody knows who that's going to be exactly yet. And we're just excited about it. We hear and feel that excitement in the community because we're out and about doing things throughout the course of the winter. And, you know, unfortunately, Eugene Melnyk passed away prior, you know, to the start of last year. And so we just hear a lot of things in the community and people are excited about the hockey club. It's, you know, a good hockey club. We just missed the playoffs this year and hopefully they can build, you know, on something and they can compete for a playoff spot this year, you know, after 6 years of not making it. So,
okay. Before we let you go, just some news you can bring back to your group here. There's a report out on the sale thing that Apostolopoulos is out. So maybe there's only three.
Okay.
But then we'll see if he's back in or not. I guess the process has been, you're like me. You're like every fan.
Yeah.
We're just like, you hear things and then you wonder and then we sit and wait.
Yeah. So, just don't know. Right. Yep. All that we can is from, you know, hearing what, you guys have to say on the radio, TV or print. Right. And, that's all we know because we don't have any inside scoops. And I don't think, I don't think the individuals real close to the team have, know which individual, because I would assume that, you know, people are just getting their financing in place. And that's just my
assumption.
You've
got to move some money around. You're a silent partner in all this.
There's a few like Mathot, Neil, and Phillips on that. You better talk to them as they come by.
All that 80s hockey player money, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Just sitting there, gold bars.
That's right. Here's some pocket change for you, Lloydie. Yeah, it was great. We got a chance to do something we love to do, play hockey at the highest level. We made a good wage for it, and so we're thrilled for the younger generation. You know, the game of hockey's healthy. I mean, when franchises can sell for what obviously Nashville did for Pittsburgh and what the Ottawa Senators are going to sell for, and then, of course, what the players make as they share, revenue, that means the game's healthy, right? They're getting money from television, and it's wonderful. So I'm real happy for the younger generation of players, and we're just trying to, for the older generation of players and for the currently retired players who are making Ottawa their community, we want them to know there's a bunch of us former players that are living in the community doing good stuff. We want them to be involved because we want we want them when they're ready to come and join us and do some great things in the community because that's what we've always done.
Yep.
And as players, as the current group of players, and you can see what, you know, the Brady Tkachuks and the Thomas Chabots and these kinds of individuals are doing in the community, how important that is for a community like Ottawa. They raise tremendous amounts of money for different causes that they place their name behind, and we can continue that, and I think we'll be a great asset for whoever that new ownership group is.
Yeah, and just last thing to pick up on that, can you believe it's 31 years ago this October was opening night night, and you were there, and you're the original captain. And to your point, we talked to Yorkie off the top of the show, and there's a history to this group now. Like when you were starting out, it's like there were former players, a lot of the alumni, and there's some here today. You welcome everybody. Hey, listen, if you want to be a part of the family, but look at the list of former Senators that you have now, because it's been 30 years. We got a history now.
That's right, and more guys that played with the Ottawa Senators are living in the community. Like you said, Jason York, Sean Van Ellen, Mark Mathot, Chris Neal, Chris Phillips, Daniel Alfredson, these kinds of individuals, right? And you know, the warmer bodied players are the ones that connect with the most recent fan group, right? As opposed to, you know, we played, you know, myself and Jimmy Kite and some of us old guys played back in the original first few years, right? So the younger generation, if you're not 30 years old, you're not going to know, like, who's Laurie Bossman? Where does, you know, what women's team does she play for, right? So... So you know, it's totally good, right? But it's great. It's great to be a part of the community. It's great to give back. Those are things that we know from our days as active players, and I think that's something that we want to continue to do. We have a very good group, and I think with new ownership, we're excited to see who that might be, just so that we can continue to partner with the new ownership group, with the Ottawa Senators, because we are a separate entity, but yet we're closely connected with the current crop of Ottawa Senators, and we want to make our community even better, and that's why we do what we do, right, Lloydie? Yeah. And that's why you guys set up radio here, talk radio, sports talk radio, and you guys assist in these kinds of things, and we're all a part of this community. It's a great community. We love it. So if we can do something to give back, I mean, my goodness, that's the least we could do.
Great to be here. Great event. Thanks for coming by. Get your food, eh?
You're welcome. Thanks, lady.
Keep cheating. Do it all. All right.
Okay. All right. 600, remember, okay?
Okay. Yeah. All right. See ya. All right. There's Laurie Bossman joining us here from the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with a lot more and more guests rolling through as well on In the Box on TSN 1200.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200. He was a hard-headed man. He was
brutally handsome. She was terminally pretty. All right, welcome back to it. In the Box, TSN 1200, live at the Marcia Sens Alumni Tournament to benefit Soldier On and First Assist. Continue to dabble in some in-person interviews. We've had Laurie Bossman on, Jason York has stopped by, all kinds of Sens alumni and NHL alumni taking part in this event. We're going to have AJ Jakubek join us from the road. He has just hit the road. He just let us know. So we'll pop him on here in the next little while and get what he thinks about last night. Not just the hockey, of course, but more so it was opening night in the CFL. And we have Friday Night Football tonight as well on TSN TV, and also tomorrow night on TSN 1200, the start of the Red-Black season. That's why AJ's on the road, going to Montreal. It's Red-Blacks and Alouettes, 7 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night. Lee and Duke will have the pregame show at 5:30, so we'll get to that probably, I think, in about 20 minutes, depending on our guests that could be rolling through here. But definitely AJ's going to come on sometime here in the noon hour. Gord Wilson's going to stop by in the 1 o'clock hour as our Sens and NHL insider. Steve Lloyd here at the course. Graham Creech co-hosting, producing back at 87 George. And Creecher, I took the liberty during the break to go through these multiple texts you kept talking about. I think to consolidate, basically the texter thinks everybody's stupid, and you've cost yourself some money. That's pretty much it, right? I got that covers it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you did a fine job there. Of some,
I think that's the Coles Notes version. Sean in Orleans says, Leaf superfan Kiprios is out. Oh, darn. How will the Sens build a winner now? And, of course, Nick Kiprios, has been advising the Steve Apostolopoulos bid. And the report coming within the last hour or so, Bruce Garriott and Post Media having it, saying that Apostolopoulos has grown tired of the process. It's been dragging on too much, and he has said, I am out. But the report also states there's a chance he could be talked back in. So we'll see. See, Josh just chimed in. You know the longtime listeners, right? If AJ just left, he should be there in 20 minutes.
He's not driving, but good text.
Should be there, and that goes back to the last, well, no, it's the first time the Sens played the Habs in the playoffs when we were doing shows for Montreal and broadcasts, and AJ was the pilot of the vehicle coming back after the game, after the Sens ousted the Habs in the playoffs with myself and Simmer, and he was just determined to meet a buddy back in Ottawa for last call, and that buddy was Graham Creech, and he made it.
Hey. No, we didn't make last call. We made two last calls.
That's right. You made last call in Ontario, and then you went to last call across the river. Oh, the beauty of living in the nation's capital, right? There you go. All right, some thoughts coming in on the sales, Sens sale news. In my opinion, Ann Lauer's always been number one from day one, and others just ate the are just levers to get his bid up. Honestly, that's kind of the way I felt about it. As well, it goes back to what I said in that he's a known, right? And there's something to be said for, you know, the phrase "be the good soldier" as well. He's been excellent for the NHL as a minority owner of the Montreal Canadiens. He's been at board meetings over the years. They know exactly who he is. You know, the vetting process continues with everybody throughout this. You don't just, oh, we know the guy, so let's, we don't have to vet this guy as much. No, you do. But you've already got a rich history and a relationship with this individual. That kind of stuff does matter, right? That's helpful. Not the end-all be-all. This is an estate sale still. But if you were looking at the process from the get-go, there were two groups that are in or have been in the league already, and that's the Kimmels and that's Anlauer. And those two groups reportedly still in, and the Nico Sparks group still technically in as well. No grand pronouncements there, but the report coming in the last hour from Bruce Garriock and Post Media is that Apostolopoulos is out for now. You got to say that, right? You have to say that. There's no rules to this process whatsoever. This one, people have to be patient. This is a billion-dollar sale. It takes time to go through all the details of the offers. Too bad people are done with this process, but again, a billion-dollar sale doesn't get completed overnight. Okay, yeah, but we blew past the timeline it took for the $6 billion sale of the Washington Commanders, what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? Like, I'm talking... Like, from the day that it was announced the sports team is for sale to the day it was announced who the winning bidder is. And that's Harris, of course, who beat out Apostolopoulos to buy the Washington Commanders. The Sens sale process with each passing day for the last number of weeks is blowing by that. So, come on, there's that, right? This has, you don't just rush this. This is a... around a $1 billion sale. Of course you don't rush it. But it was a $6 billion sale, the Washington Commanders. They got that done a lot faster than what's going on here. Like, not even close at this stage. And maybe that's part of it with Apostolopoulos as well. Listen, I've already been through this, and I was runner-up, and I went through the process as long as I did. And now this is something one-sixth the price of what I was involved in with the NFL attempted purchase. And we're still not getting anywhere? I'm out. Or maybe he's out because this is his last ditch. Let's go. Are you taking my highest bid or not? Could be as simple as that as well. Big Rick writes, this is exactly what I was afraid of once Reynolds Group dropped out. We can't screw this up. Be the end of the franchise as we know it if all parties dropped out with frustration. Players will want out. Maybe that smoke in Ottawa is the actual sky is falling in this town. Get the damn deal done. All caps from Big Rick. Oof. All right. Big Rick, we'll put you in the frustrated pile. Cheers from Pasquale. Only the NHL could screw up the record-breaking sale of a franchise, and the people wonder why fans are so frustrated with the league. Yeah, I get it. That's part of it. Rob says, hey, guys, I just heard the Saudis bought the Sens for $10 billion, and Greg Norman will be the president of hockey ops.
That was the initial report, but it's actually Messi who has purchased the Senators.
It's actually Messi?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's Messi.
All right, that's good. That's good to know here. Gives me an excuse to check the leaderboard here, shift gears, as the RBC Canadian Open continues at the Oakdale Golf and Country Club in Toronto. And, of course, there's being the Canadian Open, more Canadians are in the field at this PGA Tour event. 21 Canadians are in the field. Now, we have 6 full-time card members on the PGA Tour, and a few of them are playing quite well early on. Now, Corey Connors was the day one leader, and he is still not teed it up. He's off at 110 this afternoon for his second round, so he is still sitting there at 5 under par, which now is one back of the leaders. There is a, as we speak, a 4-way tie for the lead at 6 under par. Corey Connors finds himself in a group at 5 under par, and again, he's off at 110. Fellow Canadian Adam Hadwin has a few holes left. He's 3 under for the day. He's got it to 4 under par. Taylor Pendrith is at 4 under par as well. He's got about 5 holes left in his day, and he's 1 under for today. So a few Canadians lurking. How about this? Like 21 Canadians, you're not the average fan, even if you're a golf fan, you will not have heard of everybody. But this is kind of the beauty of this championship. Remember in years past, like we learned who Jared Dutoit was. We learned who Derek Gillespie was when they would have great runs. And Gillespie, of course, really went mainstream with the big break on Golf Channel as well. But a gentleman by the name of Will Bateman is 5 under through his first 9 holes today, Graham, Canadian. And he's got it to 3 under the tournament so far. Now, he started on the back, and the one consistent message I've seen coming from all the players and even James Duffy, who apparently the more Duffy speaks about it, you know he didn't have fun there in the Pro-Am that he played in on the true front nine. The front nine's a tougher nine, okay? So Bateman started on the back nine, went 5 under. Now he's playing the tougher nine. So we'll see how he goes. So they're potentially a very nice Canadian story with Will Bateman off to a good start today. So there you go. There's your brief update of the RBC Canadian Open. There is your leaderboard. We'll take our top hour break. We'll come back here. It's starting to get a little busy around here. It's lunchtime. Everybody's coming by. It is the Sens Alumni Golf Tournament to benefit First Assist and Soldier On as we continue on In the Box on TSN 1200 from the Marshes.